doing his thing for you, SA Today. Find his work while you can pick up a copy of the paper at your local newsstand. Go online. It's usatoday.com. On Twitter, it's at George Schroeder. George, how are things in the Sooner State?
Yeah, it's a beautiful time of year. Just the temperature's great. Not a ton going on. Knock on wood. It's not a bad place to be.
You know, you gave me a good laugh. You tweeted, and we were just talking about it, the confirmation by Tom Cruise that a Top Gun sequel is in the works, and you used airport codes, and of course, I see EWR being a Jersey boy. I know you're talking about Newark, but so I'm trying to do the math here. The original Top Gun, were you in middle school, maybe high school, and was that movie kind of big with you and your buddies at the time?
I was not born yet, as far as you know.
Stop that.
Come on. I was in high school.
Okay.
It was a good movie, you know. I mean, you go back and look at it now, there's a whole lot of schlock to it, I think. But, you know, I thought it was just sort of the 80s formulaic movie thing, but which, you know, seemed to be part of the deal. But it was a good movie. You know, it's just I have a hard time kind of figuring out how 30 or 31 years later, especially if Tom Cruise is supposed to be, you know, the hero of the thing, and you assume he is, how that's going to work. Because obviously he would have been, and that's why I used airport codes, he would have been long retired from the military by now, probably flying jumbo jets across the country for, you know, one of the major airlines. That's what he would be now if he's still flying.
No, I loved it. The buzzing the tower from San Francisco to Newark. That would be a sight for sore.
He's got the red eyes on United Airlines flight 417 or something like that. And he got the call, so he decided, I'm just going to buzz this tower at Newark. What can they do to me? I'm about to go back into the military. And then he saved the world. And I just made all that up. But what exactly could the plot be with a guy, you know, a pilot who's now in his 50s, right?
At least.
Or 60s.
Right.
In terms, and I'm not talking about however old Tom Cruise is, but however old he was supposed to be when the movie, you know, came out. Add 31 years to that.
Well, I'm concerned about the potential for geriatric sand volleyball. So everybody's got their own issues to deal with.
The dude wore no shirt with long jeans. And now look, it's better than wearing shorts. Don't get me wrong, but he was wearing jeans with no shirt out there to play sand volleyball. I can't think of much worse.
Well, it was awesome, and I enjoyed your take on it. I would say let's get serious, but let's get to the NFL. Last year, it seemed like they were calling penalties on guys for the most minimal touchdown celebrations. One receiver just flipped the ball, which ended in the direction of a defender. Now it looks like they're going to go a bit easier. I'm from the school of, if you're not delaying the game or taunting, it's a passionate game. You know the history, whether it's the Dirty Bird or Icky Shuffle. I kind of enjoy it. What are your thoughts on easing the restriction and actually letting guys celebrate after they score a touchdown?
Well, I mean, for years it was the no fun league. Obviously, that's the easy line. But, I mean, I've got no problem with it at all, and I think it's fine. I mean, nobody cares if an NBA player goes back down court, you know, doing the three goggles or whatever the latest thing is after a three, or flexes on the way back down court after a dunk. Why should they care? And by the way, it's a whole lot bigger deal to score a touchdown than it is to score two or three points.
Sure.
In an NBA game. So why is it such a – and we don't care if soccer has these incredibly, you know, elaborate pantomime celebrations after a goal. Now, obviously, it's a whole lot harder to score a goal in soccer than it is to score a touchdown. But why can't you be somewhere in the middle of those two? That's what I want to know in terms of the celebration. Now, I'm not suggesting you pull a Sharpie out of your sock or that you mimic taking selfies or whatever. But I mean, I do think they've gone way overboard over the last, you know, however many years in not letting you celebrate at all. And I'm glad if, in fact, I'll believe it when I see it, if, in fact, they really do loosen up I'll be glad. I mean, it's one thing to say they're going to. It's another thing to see how it's actually called.
Yeah, be curious as to the execution. Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. So your last assignment in Florida, the ACC meetings, obviously the rep for being the basketball league, but now the reigning champ in football. You wrote about stability. And as an outsider, I've always looked at the ACC as kind of a constant. But from inside, what were some of the issues from who's in what division? You wrote about something called the grant of rights, TV exposure, where they see that things have come together for that stability.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, they've always been a really good basketball league, but in some ways it's been used as a pejorative. Yeah, you're a basketball league. Especially when it comes to sort of their neighbor, the SEC, talking about how basically that means your football's not very good. Well, obviously Clemson won the thing, the national title. But it wasn't just Clemson, and it's not just this last year. Over the last 4 or 5 years, first of all, Clemson and Florida State have won a couple of titles, played for three, and also there was a semifinal appearance in the playoffs by Florida State. Obviously, the Ducks beat them in that.
Yep.
So they've had teams at the top of the heap, but beyond that, they've begun to build some depth. I mean, last year they finished with five teams in the top 25, the final top 25, which is, you know, that's sort of SEC territory in terms of that kind of thing. And in sort of, I'm not suggesting that they have risen to maybe where the SEC was at its peak, whenever that was, 5 or 6 years ago.
Sure.
When it was really, really tough, and it's kind of been living off its reputation a little bit here. But I am saying that with the corresponding sort of decline a little bit of everybody in the SEC not named Alabama, that the ACC now has more depth and overall sort of quality of play in the league than the SEC does right now, which is sacrilegious to say. And even last year, we were talking about, wow, this may be the Big Ten, and then I think they got exposed a little bit in the postseason. And I think that the mantle has to go to the ACC as being the best football league right now, at least coming off last year. Now, obviously, they're about to play the games again, and when they do, if you don't keep winning, you know, somebody else will assume that mantle, and it very well could be the SEC again at some point. But it's been kind of a gradual surge in football, both with their elite teams and with the teams below elite that have gotten better, the programs have gotten better, and that makes them a very formidable league in both of the two revenue-producing sports.
Yeah, so was there a lot of talk about overall conference strength, you know, because we mentioned they won the basketball title. It's a very good women's basketball league. It's a baseball league, track and field. I mean, when you take into consideration softball, women's lacrosse, I mean, North Carolina's a powerhouse there. But and I understand that being one of the big boys in football is a catalyst. But, you know, overall, it was the ACC meetings, not the ACC football meetings.
Right.
Are they feeling like, wow, right now we can go toe-to-toe with pretty much any conference, any sport?
Well, sure. And I got somebody tweeted at me who's a Pac-12 fan saying, hey, the Pac-12 wins more national titles than anybody else. And that's obviously been true through the years. But here's the deal. It does start with football and men's basketball, and then to a slightly lesser extent, women's basketball. If you're good in all of those, then that's what people recognize. And then if you're competitive in the other sports, which they certainly have been, you kind of went down a list a little bit there. If you're competitive in other sports, but you're at the top of, say, football and men's basketball, then to me it's hard to say you're not the best conference.
Sure.
Because first of all, you're going to be the thing that drives the health of your conference financially is if you've got great football. And so, you know, I think they're set up well. The other thing I would say that's sort of an intangible off-the-field thing for them is this time a year ago, they signed their grant of rights extension with everybody signing their media rights away till 2035-36. That's a long time, obviously.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the time, it was basically a 20-year agreement. And so suddenly they'd emerged from several different rounds of realignment, you know, both people, them plucking people and people plucking them, people from them, like Maryland, to feel like they've kind of got some stability now. And I think that's helped too. So, and then of course, later in the summer, along with that grant of rights announcement, there was the announcement that yes, ESPN is going to go ahead and do the ACC network, which they had contracted to do. When you put all that together, And then you add in the success they're having on the field and in courts and things like that. It makes for a really strong conference right now, and they're right to sort of kind of beat their chest a little bit. And the only other thing I've said is if you live in the same footprint, and a lot of them do with sort of the SEC, they at least, you know, sort of share contiguous borders, I guess, then you probably want to do a little chest thumping because you've heard nothing but that for years.
No, I agree. I've always been a big ACC fan. Talking college sports with George Schroeder, USA Today. On the lighter side, there's a hysterical audio out there. Paul Feinbaum has this legendary caller, Phyllis, who got into it with Terry Bradshaw, said Nick Saban's salary is shameful, and he is making more than $11 million this season. But you know, Alabama's not clipping coupons to pay their coach. Like the Yankee owners didn't have to sell a yacht to pay player salaries. It's based on revenue. And, you know, to people like you and I, the money is insane. But is that a bit of a tired argument, or sometimes the average working person just finds it an easy target?
Well, it's an easy target, especially if you think, well, the players should be paid and that kind of thing. And then you see the coach is making X million dollars. I'll say this: it's hard to defend that, but I can defend it in Alabama's case in that they're making a ton of money, and the actual football success at the University of Alabama has driven a tremendous surge in just normal enrollment over the last 8 or 10 years, and so it's actually football has sort of become a driver for the school. Now we can argue all day philosophically about whether that should be the case or not, whether their priorities are misplaced. And I would say, yeah, that puts them in good stead with a whole lot of other people whose priorities are misplaced too at other schools.
Yeah.
But I can make the financial argument that it makes all the sense in the world to pay him that he's worth that because of the money that he's bringing in directly with the football revenue that floats their entire athletic department. And then also indirectly sort of how that has really promoted the school and probably fed directly, or at least, you know, been a pretty good driver indirectly of their enrollment surge.
$104 million in revenue last year, profit about half of that, which is
right, which is pretty spectacular. And that means profit half of that, which means that other half included his salary.
Yep.
You know, that would have been part of the expenses. So, I mean, you know, it's been an amazing run, obviously, what he's done at Alabama. And you don't have to like it, or like the way he's gone about it, or like the way they've dominated things, to respect it and understand how good they've been and how much of a force it has become.
All right, let's finish with the NBA playoffs. So it was going to be two sweeps. Then there was a close game. Game one in the West, Kawhi Leonard goes out, Golden State finishes it. Then last night we had Kyrie and LeBron take over in the second half. I mean, the narrative has been the NBA playoffs have been brutal to watch. There's been no excitement except for here or there. So are we now just hoping the Cavs close the deal? And for those of us who've just stuck it out and watched game after game after game after game, that there's going to be a payoff and it's going to be a great final?
Oh, they're closing the deal. Let's dispense with that.
Okay.
Right off. Okay. I mean, could Boston steal another game? Yes. But they're closing the deal. But the second piece of it is, I'm not sure we're getting a great finals, because I know we all think that finally when they match up in the actual finals that we'll finally get teams that can be competitive with each other. I'm not convinced of that. Now, I think LeBron is awful hard for those guys to stop, and I know Kevin Love has had some terrific games, and obviously Kyrie Irving had a fantastic game last night. But I just, you know, look, when the Warriors added Kevin Durant, they essentially added the best player on their team. Because I would tell you he's better than Steph Curry. If you want to argue that Steph Curry's better than him, you're not going to argue that you basically had two MVPs. That's actually what they are, right?
Yeah.
Two former MVPs. That's how good they are. It's two of the five best players in basketball. LeBron obviously is one of the five best players in basketball, and I would say he is the best player in basketball. But then you fill in with Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and whoever else they decide to throw out on court, and that is an unbelievable lineup. And so I'm not sure we're looking at a seven-game back-and-forth unbelievable drama within each game, and the fourth quarters are can't miss TV. I'm not sure we're looking at that. I think the Warriors are going to win it. Now, I hope I'm wrong, and I know if I'm wrong, you'll bring it up to me, so we'll be okay there. But
we got time.
The Cavs are going to get to the finals. And at that point, we'll see if we can get something fun.
Well, I feel like now they owe us. I'll be sending bills out to Cleveland and Oakland because I'm nutty enough. I've watched a bunch of these games. So there you go.
Well, given I don't blame you for starting to watch, like being there at tip-off. But if you watched all the way through a bunch of these games, you are nutty because they've been terrible.
Yeah, I've done it both ends. I've decided no more, and I've also been like, all right, here's what I'm going to do. I'll be watching something with my wife and checking my phone, and it's like, all right, I need to watch a fourth quarter, which has happened a surprisingly few amount of times, I got to actually tell you. All right, George, good stuff. As always, we appreciate you getting our Wednesday started. Enjoy your week, Memorial Day, and we'll chat with you next week.
All right, man. Thanks. Take care.
Take it easy.